You're listening to Avasant on the Record, a podcast discussing key trends and insights into government-driven markets.
With Avasant's On the Record podcast, I'm August Cole, writer-in-residence. We're joined by Matt Vallone, who's the Director of Research and Analysis at Avasant Analytics.
Morning.
Before you joined Avasant, Matt, you worked as the Legislative Director for Congressman Carol Shea Porter in the House of Representatives, which makes you especially able to talk to us about just what is going on with appropriations and authorizations on the Hill lately when it comes to the NDAA for 2018. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
You've recently written at War on the Rocks that a major increase in defense appropriations looks unlikely. And the NDAA, the authorization bill for 18, is no bellwether either. So what's driving this assessment, and how do you square that with the political rhetoric out there about defense priorities for the Trump administration?
So I think there's really three things from my perspective that make me skeptical that they'll be able to get a top line near what they have in the NDAA. First is that the NDAA came in at a level much higher than a lot of the other proposals that we've seen out there. So if you look at the FY18 budget request, that was a lower value. If you look at the FY18 budget resolution that Congress adopted, that was a lower budget value. And even if you look at the Appropriations Committee mark, the Senate Appropriations Committee release the week before Thanksgiving, that also came in at a lower number. Those numbers are an increase in defense spending over FY17, but they're not the same scale of increase that you see in the FY18 NDAA. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that while we do have unified control of government with a Republican in the White House and Republicans controlling both chambers of Congress, a lot of the dynamics in Congress are similar to what we've seen in past years. So you still have a block of conservatives who are unlikely to vote for almost any appropriations bill. You still have Democrats who are able to filibuster appropriations in the Senate. And you have defense hawks who are going to push for more money. So from the perspective of what can get through Congress, it's not too different than from what we've seen in the past, really, since 2011, which doesn't really bode well for high defense spending, because getting all of the math to work on those various groups agreeing to things is really hard.
I mean, Republicans in Congress could have passed higher defense spending twice this year, at least, right?
Sure.
So what's stopping them?
So within the Republican caucus, there's three groups that are worth thinking about when you think about spending. There are defense hawks who are pushing for defense spending, and they tend to be in the Armed Services Committees, and that's why you see such a significant increase in the NDAA. But then there's also two other groups that are maybe less vocal about defense spending, but are still equally important. There are deficit hawks who are concerned about spending and really would like to see spending increases limited, both for defense and for non-defense. And then there are centrist Republicans, who are concerned about the cuts that have been experienced to the non-defense spending side in the past few years, and are kind of reluctant to pass deep cuts to those programs or deep cuts to mandatory spending, the two sources of savings that you could use to offset increased defense spending. So the tension between those three groups is such that it's hard to really find enough money to pay for defense spending increases without offending the centrists. And if you don't pay for them, then you offend the budget hawks. And so that creates a lot of pressure on the caucus to find a median that is not necessarily as high as the hawks would like. And that's what you saw in the FY18 budget resolution, which was just kind of in line with regular growth, and even the FY17 budget resolution earlier this year. And to some extent, budget resolutions are not appropriations, so they don't matter. But to me, it just highlights the fact that inside the Republican caucuses, there's still difficulty getting to a higher defense number because of those tensions.
Are those tensions and the process that goes with that the new normal? Or is there something else we're going to see, do you think, in 2018, where you see defense potentially as a voter-relevant issue?
You know, absent some type of, and God forbid, some type of major military action, and with North Korea, that with the recent tests, that's not outside the realm of possibility, I don't see it being a major election year issue. It so far hasn't really shown up in much of the polling. I think when you look at what the public cares about as you look at the generic ballots, typically the midterm election ends up being a referendum on the White House overall. And that so far the generic ballot seems to be indicating that that might be how things go. But it's also a year away. So as evidenced by last year's election, predictions are hard, especially about the future. So, you know, we may see.
There's obviously a lot of deal making right now due to the Trump administration tax plan, other priorities as we look at the end of the calendar year. So with all this in play, how much political capital among lawmakers in the White House is actually being expended regarding defense programs and priorities when there are so many other potentially more important issues with a lot of the voters for both parties, really?
So it's really hard to tell with the White House. They have made a variety of statements about spending. Obviously, their budget proposal came in significantly lower than the FY18 NDAA. I think it came in at around, I'd say, $640 billion rather than $692. That being said, there are the defense hawks in both in the Senate and House are very influential, and they are strongly pushing for increased defense spending. So while the White House priorities will probably be more focused along the lines of immigration and some of the either the deferred action for childhood arrivals resolution or construction of a wall, there's going to be people with leverage pushing for defense spending, and I think that will result in a deal with increased defense spending. It's just going to be balanced amongst a whole other slew of priorities that Congress has to deal with.
Does that take form in a continuing resolution that will be good through, I don't know, January, or is it going to extend longer than that because we run out on December 8th?
So things to keep in mind as we sort of approach this are that, one, even if there is an agreement on what will be in a funding bill and what the funding levels are, it still probably will take the Appropriations Committee a week or two to put that together. So even if you have an agreement tomorrow, which after the events of yesterday where a Trump tweet set off the Democratic leadership, they still would need a continuing resolution to get beyond the 8th and through to some type of broader spending omnibus deal in later December. But if they don't have a deal by middle of next week or late next week, then you're going to see a CR that probably goes into January and possibly further, because otherwise it'd be here through Christmas, and quite honestly, Congress won't be here for Christmas absent some type of shutdown.
Is there any chance of a shutdown just due to how much the administration is trying to accomplish in these other areas?
You know, prior to this week, I would have said the chances of a shutdown were pretty small. I think that...
Because there's 280 characters on Twitter now, right?
Yes, so. Yes. That seems to have gone up. And the issues are very thorny. I think particularly around immigration, you've got significant blocks in the Democratic caucus that are not going to let their leadership necessarily make a deal that doesn't take care of their priorities, but balancing that out against conservatives and also a White House that has priorities is going to be very hard. So it would not shock me if between the complexity of those negotiations and the sort of rancor that's emerging between the White House and various players makes a shutdown something that no one really wants, but that we kind of stumble into.
If there is a shutdown, what are the defense program implications? And does that have anything to bear on who will be pegged with the blame in 2018?
Unfortunately, after the past sort of 15 years or so, the appropriations process has been so badly broken that the Department of Defense is used to operating in continuing resolutions. I think you would potentially see issues more along with disruptions in planning. And the other thing is the shutdown is it potentially increases the chances of a full year CR, which would be very bad for any type of new starts or programs expecting to ramp up in FY18. That would be deeply problematic. So those would be things that I would be concerned about. I think in the near term, the building is used to working with short-term funding. So I don't think that's as disruptive, but the knock-on effects could be bad.
From an industry point of view, though, that start-stop type approach to program support can be hugely problematic.
Yes.
You've seen a lot of high-level calls for stable funding, something that hasn't been mm-hmm. predictable for a long time. So this is obviously known, but what are people missing when they try to track this process potentially in terms of the impact on particularly priority programs?
So one thing that I think is sort of we follow this and you hear reports of what type of funding deal is being negotiated is that the current deal sounds like, just for funding, this is excluding all the political issues we discussed earlier, it sounds like they're looking towards like a two-year deal where they would raise the budget caps for 2 years. 1 year would for FY18, you'd see a very significant increase. I believe it's about $40 billion above FY17 numbers. But then for 2019, you'd see a more of a steady state for funding. If that's how things go, it'd be good from a certainty perspective. You'd have a top line, and that makes it easier for appropriations next year to get done in a more timely manner. But at the same time, it really makes the first 2 years of the Trump administration, where I think a lot of us came in expecting to see major defense increases, it kind of puts a cap on that. And it makes the midterm elections really important from the perspective of having any type of defense spending ramp. Because if you have a Democratic Congress starting with the FY20 budget, it's really hard to see the administration's goals for defense spending becoming reality. And since World War II, the average loss of the party out of power in the House has been 25 seats, which is barely enough to switch control of the House. So a two-year deal will be great from certainty perspectives, and that sounds like where they're going, but it kind of creates a cap. And program managers who have programs that are expecting to ramp up in that 1920 period will need to be aware of the fact that there could be potentially less growth than hoped for in that period. And for those programs that are ramping up, they'll need to make sure that their piece of a not particularly growing pie is taken care of.
Is that a kind of concern that you expect lawmakers to be responsive to, as they traditionally have been, when it's come to advocating for their district or the kinds of priorities that affect their constituents? Or is this an era where those kinds of relationships may also start to change in that traditional, you know, defense industrial complex dynamic?
I think you still see some of that, in the sense that typically the Congress is going to underfund O&M relative to the request and increase spending and investment. But what I think I have noticed, and I've looked at the timing and the content of appropriations relative to the request since the Budget Control Act, and whereas prior to that you generally see Congress providing not necessarily a ton more, but significantly more money than the request, since 2011 the tendency has been more for Congress to provide less than or just at the request level. So while we're still under the BCA, I think that sort of typical image of we'll take care of the industrial base is true to an extent in terms of moving money around within a top line. But in terms of adding funding, that seems to be less certain than it might have been in the past.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us today. This was a great conversation.
Great to be here.
To listen to more of the On the Record podcast, you can find us on iTunes or at avocet.com. With Avocet's On the Record, I'm August Cole.